he wrote me a check for $100. He said, "This is for your scholarship fund." And he said, I said, "What are you doing?" He said, "I'm a consultant on bridge inspection. And I go all over the country, wherever the people need me." He goes, he was just out of Louisiana. He said, "I gave my company to my son." And he said, "My son don't want me nowhere near it."
And this is someone who couldn't do his algebra.
Well, they hadn't explained it to him in the way he could understand it. See? That's when I say, you know, some of the problems when you come to the difference in the instructional methods with the black kids and the white kids, some of the problems that they had at our school is teachers teach as they were taught, and they don't obey their instruction. They get a population of students who, say 25 students in a class. They know nothing about those students' ability, nothing. They've never seen them before. And what do the first day? Give them a book and give them an assignment. I had a white teacher, first year teacher, come to me at the high school that year and said, she was given about 20 Afro-American students who were considered below par, slow learners, I guess you might call them. That's what they called them then. But they were behind grade level in math. And being a first-year teacher, she was frustrated because other teachers had a problem with those same children. She came to me and said, "Mrs. Smith, what am I going to do with these children?" I said, "What do you mean you're going to do with them?" I said, "You're going to teach them." I said, "Now go in that classroom and don't worry about first day or two. Find out something about the youngsters, what they know and what they don't know. You may give a little pop test, a little pop exercise from the Duke, and let them know I'm doing this to find out what you know and what you don't know. So I can then teach you. When you leave here at the end of this year, you'll feel that you've learned something." She came to me, the kids came to me about the end of the year and said, "Mrs. Smith," said, "I'd like for you to get Miss So-and-so out of the classroom." I said, "Get out of the classroom?" I said, "For what?" "We want to give her a party." Now, those kids had had problems with other teachers. So I made up a lie. Got out of the classroom to my office. It's long enough for them to go to their lockers, get out little cookies and sodas and cups and peanuts and stuff, and lay it out on the table in the room. She came back after the next day and she said, "You know, that's the best class I had all year long."
Was this a white teacher?
There was a white teacher. The kids loved her.
Because she cared?
Because she cared.
Motivated.
Yes, sir. And they learned some.
And she individualized their
instruction. That's right. See, she did something. She did something that no other teacher was doing. See.
So you think that this was lacking generally?
That was lacking because, as I said, everybody was so gung-ho for academic achievement, not realizing that the kids weren't ready for it. Not ready, you know. They don't have the background necessarily for this material that you give them. So find out where the kids are. And then move as fast as you can towards what you expect they should know by the end of the year. But don't second guess them. You know, let them know what you're doing and how you hope to do it. As I said, I guarantee a kid, any child that comes in my classroom, if you listen And if you don't understand, you stop me and let me know. Because I don't mind going over things, you know. Some students may catch it the first go round. But some student may not catch it. So I'm as responsible to that student who does not catch it the first time as a student who catches it the first time. If they're in my class, I am to teach every child the best of my ability and to accomplish the best of his or her ability. And if I don't do that, then I'm a failure, I think, as a teacher. I'm a failure, and I don't like to fail, you know.
Were there other problems that you can recall?
I think basically the problems were the attitude. Attitudes of I don't care. See, the attitude of not being that much interested in seeing that the students achieve. Because these students, you know, they've been used to people taking the time to make sure that they achieve. The black teachers, they weren't so gung-ho necessarily for academics without some of the other attributes that kids ought to have, some of the other things that kids should develop as a part of their educational process.
Do you think that the white teachers understood this tremendous background that you're describing from the black schools, how it was the center of activity, how they were...
No. You have to be in that school to be a part of that school to realize that. You have to be in that school to realize that. And of course, I don't think you had that same type of background in the white high school. I don't, you know, they didn't have to visit families, I don't believe, you know, as far as I know.
And they were teaching values, they were teaching academics.
They were teaching academics because that's the way they were taught.
Yeah, well, they had a lot of professors' children there.
Yeah.
Wanted to go to fine school.
Go to fine school, go to university. Yeah. And the same thing is true today. Same thing is true today. We teach because the university requires certain things. We expand our curriculum because the university says for a student to be accepted, they must do so and so and so and so. They must have certain such courses. That's what the necessarily not necessarily the university, but the colleges. They get to the point where they want students to have more courses in order to meet the requirements for entrance. And then what do you have? What do you have? Let's just look at it from standpoint. We put so much pressure on students until they begin to rebel. What do you think kids are shooting up the classmates in different schools throughout this country? That's a rebellious sign. That's a sign that kids are under threatened pressures. So money pressure. Pressure to excel. Why do you think so many youngsters are committing suicide? Now, something is wrong with our educational system that people aren't realizing. See? The parents are putting pressure on students. You very seldom hear of a black student going in a classroom and shooting up folks and all that kind of stuff. You very seldom hear of a black student committing suicide. I only know one black student who committed suicide, and that student committed suicide because the parents were comparing his ability with his sister's ability. His sister was smarter than him. And they felt that he ought to do the same thing, and the boy went home and committed suicide. Right here in Chapel Hill. Because his sister was smart, and he wasn't that smart. He wasn't smart as his sister, and his parents pressured him. Constant pressure for achievement. Now, that to me says something. Why do you think so many young people and people in our generation, in this present generation, of resorting to dope and alcohol and all that kind of stuff. I look at the television programs this morning. 10-year-old, 9-year-old kids acknowledge the fact that one little 10-year-old girl said she drank a fifth of vodka. Jenny Jones show? 10-year-old telling their parents, kiss my so-and-so and so, go to hell. Calling their mama bitches and whores and everything else. Why? And then they expect those same children to come to school and for us to teach them. Something is dead wrong. And the teacher, we are not trained as teachers. The present teachers are not trained to take care of situations like that. They're not. They're not trained for that type of activity. You know. Or they don't want to take the time to help that child straighten his or her life out. That's a part of the whole educational process. And yet we say children first. We say that the present generation are our future leaders.
What you're describing to me is a situation where there's like a culture shock among the black students at the new integrated high school, almost like a balloon that's filling with problems and it's going to burst.
But it did burst.
Can you share that with me?
Sure. Because of the attitude, because of the attitude of the students, and as I said, they had a feeling that nobody cared. Nobody was listening to them. They decided, well, I know why we can get their attention. They went through that new high school out there. And they broke every window that they could break. They threw chairs through them and rocks through them, everything. '69, I believe. '68 or '69, right in that area right there. Before I became assistant principal. They broke every window that they could break. They shattered that building. And then they walked off campus.
Anybody hurt?
Mm-hmm. They weren't out to hurt nobody. No. They were after drawing attention to people begin to listen to what they were saying.
So they were saying something before.
Oh yeah.
But nobody was listening.
Well, say they were saying we want black history courses in this school. You know? We feel like everybody ought to have a knowledge of what the blacks have contributed to this society. And yet you don't have to. The textbook don't even carry anything about it. What do you think I got all this stuff I got here? I don't intend for that to happen at R.D. Smith and Uzzell B. Smith Middle School. That those kids will say there's nothing in the library, there's nothing in the books, there's nothing in this school that predicts or that says anything about the accomplishment of the black people in this city, in this country. They can go to the library and get stuff like that, because that's where it'll be, in the library. The teachers can go. I've invited every year to Ephesus to a class to show, just talk to kids about Afro-American accomplishments. I've done it for 3 or 4 years. One teacher always invites me out, Black History Week, come on. But that was the way they said. That's when the principal came to me and asked me if I would be the assistant principal at the high school.
Was that after the riots?
After in 1970, of course the riot was over. The kids did that damage, and they met at First Baptist Church that one night, to talk about it. Now they were saying their side. They didn't say what damage they had done. I sat in the back of the room, because that's my church. I sat in the back of the room. And finally I got up and I said, now let me. I said, now, I was there and I saw what happened. And I said, none of you were there. The students were there, but none of the parents were there. I said, but I was there. And as I said, I have over the years I've developed good relationship with parents, because a lot of them I taught, see? And they trust my judgment, I think. So I told them what really happened. And I said, now it happened because of this, the same thing I'm telling you. I said, and that's one way. When the principal asked me about becoming his assistant, I said on two conditions. Two. Number one, we would listen to the students. I said, they'll tell you something if you listen to them. You don't have to agree with them, but listen to them. They'll tell you something. I said, that's what caused the situation that we just passed. Nobody was listening. Therefore, since you weren't listening, you didn't hear. You didn't hear what they're saying. And that's right. If you don't hear what they're saying, you can't advise them. You can't advise kids. You can't talk to them. I said, number two, if a child comes to our office, black or white, I don't care who it is, and knocks on our door, that door opens. I said, we are here for the students, and not for the teachers, not for the parents. If a parent's in that room, and a child knocks on that door, go see what that child wants. I said, because it takes a lot of nerve for a student, to come to the principal's office in the first place. And if we turn them away, the attitude that they're going to have is nobody cares. And secondly, they never will come back, unless they come back because of some discipline problems. I said, and you have an opportunity to keep down discipline, keep from having discipline problems, if you nip it in the bud right from the beginning. I said, now, if we can agree on that, otherwise, I'll stay in the classroom. I have peace and quiet in my classroom.
Was that made more fancy came?
No, that was Larry Grimm. Larry was hired after my mate, and Mr. McDougall retired. Mr. McDougall came over to the central office, and mate retired. I went back to Campbell, down at Campbell College, where she lived. And they hired Larry Grimm to come in and initiate this flexible program. He's supposed to have been a specialist in establishing flexible programs in school. That was Larry.
Did he institute it in a sensitive way?
Oh, yeah.
The black students appreciated
it? The black students, as far as the program was concerned, yeah. The only thing, there were drawbacks to the program. There were drawbacks to the program. I think the kids had too much free time on their own. Because built into that program was free time. And the youngsters had a little too much free time on their hands during the day.
So they had more free time. They had a black culture, black history class that they
Well, they put the teachers begin some teachers, of course, begin to put black history in, because we had some black social studies teachers out there. And of course they initiated it. And I guess over a period of time, they had materials, they got materials, teachers get material. So there's plenty of it available now. So it's just like all I have here. I got all kinds of stuff, And
how did the black students communicate with the administrators after this uprising where they broke all the windows and marched off campus?
Well, that was one problem. You see, there was only, before I became assistant principal, there was only one administrator, that's the principal. And in my opinion, the principals are away from school too much, for one reason or another, in a meeting with the school board, a meeting with the superintendent, their various organization meeting at 12 o'clock in the day, the principal would be invited to speak to the Lions Club or the Stoma Club or this club or that club or the other. and they really weren't available. They didn't make themselves available. If they were at school, they were in the office. They didn't move around to see what was going on. I very seldom stayed in my office after I became assistant. I got out where the kids were.
What about the assistant principal, McDougal? Did he take up some of the responsibilities of the principal in May Marchbanks?
Well, see, when May Marchbanks was there, when the school first opened, they didn't have that problem. I think they, between the two of them, they moved around.
Uh-huh.
Got familiar with the kids, see. You know.
How long did she stay and how long did
he Ms. McDougal stayed about 2 or 3 years, I believe. That was 66, about 70. So, Ms. McDougal stayed until about 70 because when Larry came in 70, and then Mr. McDougal retired, he went to the central office in charge of adult education. And that's when Larry asked me in 1970 to become his assistant. Oh yeah, she left the same time and retired. She retired and went back to Bowie Campbell College. She lived right outside of Campbell College. Her parents, her father, I think, had something to do with instructing Campbell College way back. But they lived right at the edge of Campbell College campus.
The school administration had a meeting with the black students after the riot. Did any leader of the black student group come forth? And
oh yes, they met with the principal after the riot, but they were so bitter. Until it took a long time for the principal might have understood, but it wasn't so much the principal as it was the teachers.
Did I had to say they were bitter. Who were you?
The students.
Were bitter.
Oh yeah.
The teachers bitter also.
Well, they weren't that bitter, but you know, they didn't express that bitterness. I guess their dislike for what happened, because. After I became assistant principal, they had a few problems with racial relations between black and white students. I had a history teacher. The only thing that teacher could say in the presence of all the students, send them home, send them home, send them home. So, and I said, get back in your classroom. Don't you dare come out of there. The students were in the hall. I told that teacher, get in your classroom and you stay in there. And I don't want to hear you giving instructions as to what to do with these students. I said, that's my job. Your job is to teach them. One of the students, during the time, my first year as assistant principal, got stabbed at it down in the pit at the university.
Stabbed?
Yeah. Motorcycle gang. He talked a lot. He talked, he ran his mouth all the time. But I don't know what happened, but they say a motorcycle gang was down in the pit and the motorcycle gang stabbed him. And he laid there, and the hospital is right across from him. And he laid there and bled to death when nobody got him to the hospital. Now you had a bunch of girls and boys, black kids, down there at the pit, and whatever they were going on. And they stood there and saw it. They saw their classmate die because nobody put forth an effort to get him to the hospital. And you know where it came the next day? It came to school. I had 10 black girls, as mad as anybody I have ever seen in my life. As a result of that incident, and most of them I had talked to parents. And everybody was scared to death of them. I walked out in the hall and told them, come in. Come on in my office. And we went in my office and we sat there. I told them, I said, listen, get a seat, sit down. I said, now, I can sympathize with your feelings. And I want you, each one of you, to vent your feelings, how you feel about this whole thing. I said, I don't expect anybody to interrupt the other one. Every one of you will have your chance to talk. I said, and after all of you have talked, then it's my turn. And you could hear them all over that central office out there. They were cussing, they were doing everything that they could possibly do. So I sat back in my chair just like I am sitting here. They were all around me, in front of me, sitting all around me. I sat down and listened. After it was all over, then I had my say. I talked about the whole incident. And then it was near commencement time. And I was in charge of caps and gowns and invitations and that type of stuff for the seniors. And I think maybe the invitations had come in. And I had them in the book room down the hall. And I said to them, I said, you know your invitations are here for your commencement. Would you like to get yours today? And everybody said, yeah. And we walked out of my office. They had their arms all around me. I had my arms around them, and everybody's mouth was wide open because they heard everything they say, and they thought I was in trouble. They thought I would be afraid. I would be attacked. I said, no, kids don't bother me. Kids just want somebody to listen to them. Yeah, they've experienced a terrible tragedy of their classmates.
A high school student?
Yeah.
Who went down to the pit at UNC?
Yeah, all of them. Well, all of them were down the pit. That's where they go. They used to go down there on weekends, on days, nights, when anything was happening to people, they'd go down there. That's natural for young kids. That's just, you know, high school seniors. And they had seen their classmate lay on the ground and die. And nobody seemed to care about it. Another incident that in which they had a feeling that nobody cared. So all that was happening during the integration process, that's a part of it that went on. And the school suffered from it, you know. It was carried over to the school, almost everything. That happened in the community. To turn over in the schools that next day. And we had to deal with it. And the way we dealt with it determined how the school reacted, how the situation was taken care of as far as these youngsters were concerned.
How did you handle the white teachers and the difference between how the blacks were treated Lincoln High School, and then how they were treated by the white teachers in the integrated high school? Was there any sensitivity training? Were there meetings to discuss this issue of how there was sort of a culture shock for the black students in the new high school?
Of course, I always had teachers meeting, and somebody would do it. I don't think they dwelt on. What the teachers could do to eliminate or to reduce some of the culture shock, because, as I said, most emphasis in this school system has always been academics, always, and it still is. It still is that way, you know. It just so happens that the era of rebellion. To some extent, has passed. Other things have taken its place, you know. Dope, alcohol, all that sort of things are coming into play, see. And to a great extent, you see indications of a lack of concern. I walked in the classroom at the high school not after I retired, and the kids were doing anything they wanted to do. The teacher's sitting right there at the desk. They were teaching. They were letting the kids laying on the floor and doing everything they wanted to do. It just so happened that you don't have that rebellious aspect of the population now that we had when we were back in the 70s. Now the kids don't care.
So did you feel that the problems that existed were addressed and resolved?
Not fully, no. No, I don't think they were. They were addressed, but they weren't resolved. You know, some talk about it, but not enough to really have the students feel that change their attitude about whether anybody cares or not. For a long time, eventually, yes. When they begin to put in Black History courses and other things in the curriculum, and the kids begin to develop some allegiance, you might say, to certain aspects of the program. I had a music teacher who did not want Black students in the chorus. Now, it's a known fact that Black kids could sing. They had good voices, but she didn't want to deal with them because the type of music that she was teaching was not the type of music that the Black kids liked. And evidently she didn't want to blend any of it in there. So what I did, I had a young man who had started to go to the left a little bit. He was a brilliant young man for grandpa music. So I called him in my office and I said to him, listen, I want you to develop during lunch hour at this school of a course, a Black course. I said, I want you to start off with, I want you to select 8 people, just 8. And I want you to get those 8 and get them trained during their lunch hour. Make it known. And I talked with them. I said, now, after you eat your lunch, then you go to the gym. When you get those 8 trained, I want you to get 8 more. You'll have 16. When you get those 16 trained, I want you to get 16 more. You'll have a course of 32 people. I said, and when I feel like, and I told them why. They knew why. I said, because we've got to let these people know that Black kids can do something, can sing. I said, now when I feel that you're ready for a program in which all students can come in, I'll call an assembly. And I'd go in at lunchtime and listen to them, you know. They worked hard. After they eat their lunch, they'd go in the gym. Nobody but those students and that one young man. So finally I said, okay, I think you're all about ready for a concert. So we called an assembly. Now usually when an assembly is going on, students will leave school. That's an opportunity for white kids to leave school. Nobody left that school that day. Those kids went in there and they sang for about half an hour. You've never heard anything like it. They got standing ovation from every student in that gym. And the gym was packed. Student and teachers. And I did it for one purpose. To teach that white teacher that what she was missing from the standpoint of development, a good course at this high school.
Did it change her ways?
Oh yeah. She began then to think, well now, why not have some of this type of music as a part of my core program? Why not? She didn't do as much as I hoped she would do. As much as the kids hoped they would do. But they set the stage for a lot of things, you know. Because I had been used to Black courses in the blink of They had been used to black horses in Lincoln. And they had been used to black horses getting excellent grades in contests, in state contests, that she had know nothing about, but music teacher know nothing about.
They teach black history at Lincoln High?
Oh, yeah.
So they had a specific course.
Well, yeah, they didn't teach black history per se as a course, but they, in their social studies curriculum, was a section that we talked about the contribution of black to the development of this country. And that's all the kids wanted to, in the course. Let's talk about some of the things that we've done, that the black folks have done. See? Now, George Washington Carver, look at what he did with the peanut. Look at the number of products he made from the peanut. Look at the guy who did this, who did that. Some of the guys that I have right over there, some that you have.
Oh, some of the inventions.
Inventions, yeah.
That nobody recognizes, I think, in our country, so many of the conveniences in the kitchen that were done by the blacks.
Black people, that's right. That's right. We use them every day, but we never say who did it. We never talk about them. See? I have a... The idea that I'm collecting all these Afro-American pictures of great Afro-Americans is another effort on my part to carry out my basic philosophy of life, is that of making a difference in the lives of young people, those who have never realized what the Afro-Americans have contributed to this country. And in this way, the young people in R.D. Smith and UZLP Smith Middle School will have an opportunity to really see and listen to and hear discussions on what the Afro-Americans have done as far as development of this country in all areas of a person's life. Because they are, these pictures cover almost any area that you can think of, law, medicine, athletes, everything.
Are you going to put that in the new middle school?
This will be a part of the new middle school, R.D. Smith and UZLP Smith Middle School.
It will be there,
not only for the youngsters who are in that school, but for any teacher in the system who would like to use it. All they have to do is go out and check it out. I'm sure the librarian would be happy to let them have it as a part of their display, because the principal of the school has told me that they would have a lot of this type of stuff permanent in cases, so that everybody, it won't be something that will be hidden under a basket. It'll be a part of that school in showcases, just like trophies would be. You know, and it would be changed from time to time, so that because there are a lot of duplications in some of the stuff that we have here. I did that purposely, so that if a person gets one of these book photos album, they may get some of the same material that's in another photo album, so they won't miss out on a lot of them. And then they can realize that, well, maybe another album will have something different. And then it'll go back and it will create enough interest that youngsters will want to do a lot of research into the accomplishment of the Afro-Americans. And particularly the Afro-American students who are growing up in this community. And I would hope that the whites would be likewise, be so interested that they would want to learn more about who did what, you know. Who patented some of the things that we use every day, you know? Who accomplished to the North Pole and all that kind of stuff? And see a picture of that person up there. You know, all they may know now is a name, and they don't know whether he's black or white. But if they see a picture of that person, they'll know what color he is and get a greater appreciation for the role that we have played in American life. But we get back to the high school.
Is there anything more that you think is important to share with me, or anything in particular you want to say about the integration of the high school, R.D.?
Well, one of my concerns has always been, and I've explained it to the chancellor at the university, and I've explained it to the dean of the School of Education, and I've explained it to the superintendent of school, is the fact that I think a lot of the problems that we're having and that we have had and still are having in our school as far as achievement is due to the fact that our teachers have not had any type of instruction, no type of seminar, and no type of work in developing motivating skills that they can carry in their classroom and apply. It's just not a part of the educational structure in colleges and universities. Our emphasis is on academics too much, and not on how best to take what academics we have and apply it so that children will learn, and children with different backgrounds and abilities. Right now, we're coming up with methods in which we might bridge the gap between white accomplishments and black accomplishments. But nowhere in those techniques that we have we seem to be afraid to say to teachers, you need some work in motivating kids. And I gave the superintendent a man's name in Norfolk, Virginia, who goes all over the state of Virginia giving lectures to school board members, to parents, to teachers, and to students about student motivation. He charges maybe $100 a day plus expenses. But if you get results, what difference does it matter? They don't get it in colleges and universities. I don't care. You can go to almost any college in this country and they won't have in their curriculum anything about student motivation. I went to graduate school at State College in Raleigh. First thing they gave me was a list of things that I had to read, articles that I had to read. Now, there wasn't a single article in that group required reading about student motivation. When that would make me a better teacher, if I just can develop some skills, because that's one of the characteristics of a good teacher, is being able to motivate. And I said to the chancellor, I said, what would happen? Let's talk about one thing. What would happen if Dean Smith did not turn out a winning basketball team? I said, I know what you do. You buy his contract and send him on his way. I said, yet you turn out teachers and send them out into the schools who can't turn out winning students, who don't know how to motivate kids. And what we do, we let them get tenure, 3 years. And once they get tenure, forget it. You've got to prove, if you find that they're incompetent. And how are you going to prove that they're incompetent?
Let's go back to the motivation. And can you be more specific by what you mean about motivating a student?
All right, well, let's give you an idea. One of the things that I use, I have a poem called Equipment. And I got that poem from a lecture that George Washington Carver gave at Hampton when I was a student there. And the poem says, figure it out for yourself, my lad. You've what the greatest of men have had. Two arms, two legs, two feet, and two eyes, and a brain to use if you'd be wise. With this equipment, everybody began. So start from the top and say, I can. Don't come in my classroom, I tell students, and say, I can't. It has been done. If it has been done, you can do it. If anybody has done it, you can do it too, if you believe in yourself. Then I get, there used to be a Purina food people. They used to give out placards with certain sayings on it, you know. So what I'll do is, I may require students to learn that poem. It's a long poem, it's about 6 or 7 verses. And from time to time, you refer to certain aspects of it, you know. Or you take out and put one of those Purina signs up on the board. When I taught driver education, one of the first things I did when I walked in that classroom, I put one word on the board. One word, and it stayed up there all during my driver education course. And that word was attitude. Now, I tell them, like, I don't care whether you learn to drive or not, unless you develop the right attitude about driving. See, because if you get behind the wheel, you've got to realize that when you get behind the wheel of this automobile, you have in your hands a weapon of destruction.